Blog Talk Radio.
Free the land, free the land, free the land. This is Brother Zumbi. This is another edition of PGRNA Radio. I'm your co-host for this evening, alongside my comrade, Brother Akin. Hope all is well out here in the world. We have an interesting show, a good show scheduled for this evening. We'll be discussing new African political prisoners, and we'll be discussing new African political prisoners of war. And we'll be having this discussion with our Minister of Information, Brother Bumani Shakur, and our Deputy Minister of Information, Baba Masai. You brothers on?
Free land, brother. I'm on. My name is Bumani Shakur. I'm the Minister of Information of the Free Republic of Africa. I'm also the current Vice Chancellor of Georgia University, host of Georgia University Radio, or the Minister of Information for the People's Party for Independence, our local cadre in Dajan McClarktown, Mississauga, Columbia, Georgia. I'm also part of the Black Auger Organizing Committee. I'm also part of the Reberry Collective, Distribution Collective that deal with the newspaper. I'm also part of Eman Jamia Action Network, former H. Red Brown, who's a current political prisoner. And I'm an overall freedom fighter, man. You know what I'm saying? That's my thing. I'm an overall freedom fighter and propagandist. I'm also an author, and I'm active in the community, you know, and I just like to do the work.
True indeed. Free the land. That's a beautiful thing, beloved. It's a beautiful thing. We also will be joined this evening by Baba Masai.
I'm not sure what Bob Messiah is at right now. He was beyond as well as Miss Aki McKaylee. He's running a little late.
All right, we'll get it going then, beloved. Tonight, okay. We'll be discussing new African political prisoners and prisoners of war. And Brother Bumani, for our listening audience, could you give our people a brief definition of a new African political prisoner, a new African political prisoner, I mean, a prisoner of war, excuse me.
Hold on right quick.
Thank everyone who's joining us this evening on PGRNA Radio every third Monday.
Repeat the question again. You said yeah, brief for what?
A brief definition, operational definition. I think that's going to help in this conversation that we'll be having.
Bob Messiah's on as well. Go ahead, repeat the question again. He's on as well. Bob Messiah's on as well.
All right. The question again, since we have Bob Masai on, could you give us tell the people who are listening who you are, Bob Masai, you know, give us a little, a brief bio of who you are and what you're into.
Since we have Bible inside, could you give us tell the people who listen who you are from the side, you know, give us a brief bio of who you are.
Okay.
And, what you're into.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, this is the problem. Okay, all right. All right, Freeland, assalamu alaikum.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
I can.
Okay, I'm running into a slight problem. I'm hearing you on the laptop.
I hear echo.
The phone, I can talk through the phone, but I can't hear you on the phone. And if I stay in the same location, I'm getting feedback.
But I'm saying, I hear you, and I say we hear you. I hear you.
Yeah. Well. Okay, but I'm getting feedback though, because you're hearing me, but I'm actually.
You're getting the feedback. I hear the computer in the background or something. You know, so you might be trying to go to a different location.
Okay, my name is Messiah Hehozi, Deputy Minister of Information, TGRNA, member of Jericho Advisory Board, Jericho Movement to Work on Recognition and Amnesty and Release for Political Prisoners and POWs, former New African Prisoner of War, and most importantly, I'm a Muslim and a member of Masjid Al-Kabar. All right, and that's the brief thing.
Thank you, beloved. Appreciate that. And the question that I asked Brother Bumani was, you know, tonight's discussion is about New African political prisoners and prisoners of war, and if we could give a working definition, a brief working definition of New African political prisoner, prisoner of war, so they'll be able to follow the conversation.
Okay. I go and get that. For instance, like Bob Masai said, he's a former New African political prisoner, New African prisoner of war, right? Political prisoner of war, right? A new African itself is an individual in this sense that relates to the New African independent movement, regardless of relating to the land, they relate to independence, and they're struggling and fight for independence, right? And a New African prisoner of war is somebody who's engaged into struggle in regards to freeing the land, in regards to their particular politics, whereas a New African political prisoner is somebody who persecuted or attacked for his or her political beliefs as a New African, or some say New African revolutionary nationalist, a New African nationalist, and they are persecuted because of their beliefs and their beliefs and ideology, such as the SHU program on the West Coast, where people operated, such as also the lockdown units all around America, right? And that basically just a simple working definition of it, you know, of the situation. Now, you're right there. The more working, it's a basic understanding of it.
I appreciate that.
Bob, so you want to add on to that?
Well, I will go with that basic one, and I'd say, like, we were talking about this again prior to the call, Brother Bumani and I, and I think, like, one of the important things, and he mentioned it, but sometimes people don't really, like, think about it, internalize it. We were talking about, like, in terms of, like, because it is a New African perspective that he was talking about. So it very much, you know, calls for somebody to actually recognize that there is, in fact, a New African nation, and that there is a New African nation involved in the struggle for independence. So if I added anything a little bit, and I think we might go into this a little bit more in details later when we were talking about New African POWs, there's a couple of categories. But one of them, since this is a program, you know, put out by the provisional government, one of the things people need to remember is that, like, when we talk about POWs, a lot of times we're talking about New Africans, those folks who are conscious, you know, of the nation and fight for its independence. But for those on the armed front, they are not, like, attached to the provisional government. And so it calls for work, because they still need work and support. But it calls for work from people a lot of times with the recognition that it's not something that's formally coming from the the provisional government. Work will come from the provisional government in support, but the provisional government makes claim that it doesn't control or direct those prisoners of war. And we think sometimes people be looking for the provisional government to do certain things that it can't do or don't do. At the same time, there's a lot of things, particularly some of the ministries in the provisional government can do and we feel should be doing to support New African POWs. But the provisional government neither controls or directs, for example, those members of the Black Liberation Army who fight in support of the independence of the New African nation. And again, we might go into that a little bit more later, but there are some distinctions. And one of the things that happens a lot of times is that those POWs who are fighting for the independence of the New African nation don't get the support because people don't even know of them. And I'll stop from there.
Okay.
No.
To follow up on that particular point you made, could you maybe name us a few of those comrades, those political prisoners, New African political prisoners or POW, that may not be known, well known as a Mumia, as a Iman Jamil Alamin, and et cetera?
Well, a brief comment on that, and I think Minister Romani might talk about some more, is that when we say they're not known, because we engaged in armed struggle, they can't be known. And we found that's not like the United States, for example, recognizes like the nation and therefore would even recognize our prisoners of war. So they're not treated in accordance with the provisions of the Geneva Convention. So in many cases, what we would be doing would be exposing folks. Now, the provisional government, it doesn't mean that the provisional government doesn't have relationships with individuals who might represent. It doesn't mean that there's not communication. But it's not like that one-on-one thing, because the war ain't over. So it ain't like we can say, like, these are POWs, the war is over, release. In many cases, folks are still involved with formations who are still engaged in struggle. And it don't mean that in many cases that they're involved with formations, that the whole formation is involved in armed actions. But they may be members of those formations. So we may, in fact, deal with them through that way. But no, that question about naming folks, it comes up repeatedly. No, they're not seeking to be known. And remember, the duty of a POW actually is escape, to be for real. When, in fact, we can develop, or they can develop the capabilities to do it. So to name as if that leads to something, no. Some we will, some we won't.
Okay. I guess I'm gonna add on to that situation, right? Another thing to be careful to be mentioned is that we also have Catch New African Citizens, which is another class of things, right? And a Catch New African Citizen is somebody who is incarcerated behind enemy lines who has went in as a citizen or claimed citizenship while behind enemy lines, you know. And by them claiming citizenship to the Freedom Republic of Africa as a new African, that should become a Catch New African Citizen because we already catch the nation. Now, whereas some of the lesser known New African political prisoners, it's a lot of those individuals, right? Especially on the West Coast. As me, I by being a member of Georgia University, I was a member of Black Organizing Committee. We talk about the individual doing Black August. We also talk about the individual doing our radio show and our different work. And one of the individual is some of the individuals are the founder of Georgia University. One of the most notable ones is Abdul Lugabashakir. They've been locked up 40-plus years, right? The brother went in political already. You know, he went in political. But since being incarcerated, he also had been attacked as well as a new Arab Shared Nationalist, being placed in the SHU program, torture, and things of that nature, right? Another one is, another who's also a member of Georgia University is Joko Hashima Jense. You know, and also Abdul Lugubashkir is coming up for parole, so he has a petition floating around, which can be found on Georgia University website on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well as be found all over social media, which you can sign, and also a couple of physical petitions as well that can be sent to you as well if you request them. And Joko Hashima Jense has been locked up 30-plus years, also been in the shoes, also was another political prisoner. Tatawa Natombo, who's a new African political prisoner. People like Matope Diguma, who's a new African political prisoner. People like Burita Williams, new African political prisoner. You know, and just so many more as well, the new African political prisoner that's floating around this situation in regard to what we look at. And we also, historically, we have seen various new African POWs, such as Bob Messiah Hosey, that's on the line right now, such as the RNA 11, you know, and other individuals like Bob Assumed out of Coley that recently been released. You know, those are new POWs who engaged in armed struggle and resistance at that time. You know, and, you know, those are some of the ones that, and also like notable ones like Assad Shakur, who's a new African political exile, or also a notable like New York political prisoner, Faith is killed, known as Monster Coda, who passed recently over the last couple of years. Those are some of the individuals, right? And, you know, the whole aspect about it is these are individuals that are constantly striving and fight for land independence, and also who are putting out information such as creating programs, creating institutions. They're active with a relationship of the people in the streets in regard to educating them, that and study groups and so forth and so on, right? You know, and they never wavered from their identity and New York Representative Nationalists, even when it came to the state in regard to the state trying to get people to debrief, people trying to associate New York Representative Nationalism as a gang aspect in which they want various court cases to distinguish that it's not a gang. You know, in the California prison system, there are recorded cases about James Crawford, a.k.a. Matola Diguma, and other individuals, you know, who won cases as well. No, Marcus Harrison, a.k.a. Kajana, who also won cases proving that New African National and New African Independent Movement is not a gang, to basically try to start the aspect of violating people up on the shoe, which is security housing unit, which is a lockdown unit, which is a gang unit they call. You know, so they're just really information about the situation, right, for the people who don't know, or the people who do know, and also for the ones who are going to listen to the broadcast later on or listen to the broadcast right now. Now, you.
I wanted to mention, like, in the names, like, we had a brother that was just released maybe about a year and a half ago, Brother Malmin Kabir. And he defined himself. He's also part of what I'm a part of. You know, he declared himself to be a new African citizen in court at the conviction. And he raised the issue of being a new African, and he raised the issue that, you know, wanted to be treated in accordance with the Geneva Convention. He was also held for, like, he went in something like 86. And he was just released like 2 years ago. So he's one of the people that folks don't know. The charge itself was part of like what was called the Al Roopman van, and supposedly like they went in because of the conviction was supposedly, or the charge was supposedly around committing terrorist acts for Libya. Now this was a time when like the U.S. wanted to go after both Gaddafi, and at the same time, as Brother Bomani mentioned, like when folks sometimes what they call like gangs, they would an official name that the state would use a lot of times was security threat group management, security threat groups. And what it allowed them to go do is to go after a lot of the nations and tribes or go after a lot of formations that in many cases were committed to, again, independence struggles. But using things like RICO, it allowed them to go after whole groupings. And among those who was also charged with at the same time is Abdul Malik Kaba, which who a lot of people know as Jeff Ford. He's presently being held in Florence, Colorado, one of the longest held prisons. He's been there since something like 2006. Prior to that, he was already in there since something like 1986. And the charges, actually, in many cases, they're like conspiracy charges on top of conspiracy charges. We're going through a thing with him right now, and I mention him because, like, well, besides the fact we represent part of what I'm part of, he's so buried in communication problems is that it's almost like every other month or something is they find another reason to deny his communications with members of the family, with members of the community. We just went through a long stretch of time with even trying to get communications with his lawyer. And we'll be talking about him a little bit more too, because he was recently denied parole. And that's a confusing situation. But again, it's like, so there's a large number of folks who actually identify with the new African independence movement that sometimes people know about, and sometimes they just don't hear about or don't know, like, all the things that's involved. But Brother Mameen, I talked to him prior to getting on this call. We'd have liked for him to maybe throw a few words, but he suffers from COPD. So his breathing is like, you know, maybe good sometimes for 10 minutes, and then that's it. He's one of the few people that we actually were able to get out, or he was able to get out on compassionate release after 27 years. So again, that's another part of the picture. And I yield.
I want to add something to that, right? Since you mentioned that, right, in regard to the quote unquote security threat groups or the quote unquote gang units when you look at the quote unquote terrorist group, what they call it, right, as well, when you look at these situations, right, and you look at the aspect of constantly African people that are actually behind enemy lines, right. And you look at all the ones that have been influenced by New African Independent Movement, became catch New African citizens behind enemy lines, right? They put them in the category of being catch New African citizens as well, right? There have been a lot of brothers throughout the California prison system, throughout the Illinois system, that have been formerly members of street organizations. Some may have been GD, Vice, Lodge, Stones, Cobras, and folk on us and other things in Illinois, and they became kind of African citizens. The same thing for brothers who were Crips and Bloods in California, they became African citizens as well. So they fall upon that category of being African citizens, right? So they need our support as well, because those are the ones who are making their transformation in regard to transforming their mind to be a person that's active and productive, not only the system that they're in, but that they want to be active, productive in the system on the outside in regards to building our nation, creating institutions, and just basically doing the work, right? And a lot of the individuals have these quote-unquote politics, you know, and they're also following some other things that people want to say, people are politicized prisoners. And I look at it being, if you're a politicized prisoner, I look at the aspect of that being that an individual had went through a politicization process, being politically educated. Not being placed in the category of being a politicized prison, which can be put as a so-called subcategory. I see that being non-existent in a lot of ways, right? Either you're either a catch new average citizen, you're a new average POW, a new average prisoner of war, right? That's the way I look at the things, because that's more realistic to me, right? Where politicization is based on a process of educating yourself. I just wanted to put that out there, you know, for future reps, and also for historical and informational purpose, right? For the people who are listening right now, people who are listening in the future, right? Just so we can get some clarity, some understanding about certain things. Now, yeah.
And if I piggyback off of that, I'd have to say this, because when I mentioned Jeff Ford, actually he's responsible for the politicization of a lot of folks. And we know a lot of times it's folks who were dismissed or, like, you know, people coming to save him and save us, when in fact he's responsible for the politicization of so many people, definitely responsible for leading a lot of folks to our Islam. Those things that are good for us, that we consider to be good, those are actually the type of things that they use against him and others like him when they're parole hearings, the influence. And I should say, like, I'm saying him because that's part of what I'm part of, and he doesn't get enough attention like that. But in Jericho, we have a lot of prisoners who continue to go up, both New Africans and non-New Africans, and sometimes for some of them, the reasons why they are turned down is because the parole boards and others will use the thing where you have influence over people. But again, the influence that they exert is a positive one, but we take it as being positive, they don't. So at the same time, you know, we want to raise and mention certain people. It goes back to something else I said before, like, we got to be conscious of the fact that we need to be developing the mechanism that can aid in the system as we raise those names. Because for every one that you hear that we may get out, or we don't get out, you know, but they get out, you know, people put a lot of work in around it. But for every one or two, you know, there's 10, 20 or more inside. And in some cases, by the time people are finally released out, they got maybe 1 or 2 years left before they transition. But I do want to say that, because, you know, we do find those folks who say that they come and save but don't even know understand the nature of the system and how vicious it are. And I also speak sometimes, I got to say, like, there's also those opportunists who, in many cases, they like to see certain people inside because it gives them the opportunity to, and this is from the left and the right, to exert their little influence without doing the work that's necessary to work with a lot of different people. So I want to add that. But in terms of the politicization, they're very much aware of the struggle for land, not the struggle for land and independence, the struggle against oppression, period. But and I say sometimes, a lot of times what happens is, like, not only do they have the awareness, but they also have the nervous equipment, or, you know, the mental stability, you know, the mental know-how to kind of get certain things done, because people can talk about a lot of stuff, but everybody can't, you know, exert the same kind of influence on people. They can do a lot of different stuff. They're good at a lot of stuff, but they can't necessarily do some of the things that we need out of leadership in order to go forward. And if I don't throw the thing out there about him actually representing leadership for me, it's because I don't seek to have those things that I've done, anything that they consider to be wrong, thrown on him and others like him.
So if I'm going out in the community, I'm dealing with brothers and sisters who probably never prisoners or the concept, you know, What are some of the talking points that we should be hitting our communities with and introducing them to New African political prisoners and prisoners of war and captured New African citizens?
Well, I'm going to say this right. You know, we have a document the GDAU and Black Organizing Committee that we've been circling for years, that talks about the historical origin, 1619 historical era of the New African. And it talks about us coming to America during the month of August of 1619, right, as human chattel, of slavery, as property, as slaves that were chained and shackled, right? You know, basically as prisoner of war, prisoner of an imperial and capitalist war, a European war, prisoner of war, right? And you look at it from the historical origin aspect, and you get people to understand the New African independent movement, just from that simple perspective alone, can ignite conversation, right, with the minds of the people, right? You know, I'm just saying from the simple perspective of that, you know, from the historical origin of what happened in 1619 during the month of August, and also during the time of Black August, what we commemorate as a revolutionary culture and a revolutionary month of resistance, right? That can be a talking point for the people. That's what I'm going to say about that situation, right? I'm going to yield that Bob Messiah, get some further understanding of his viewpoint of it.
I was hoping you would have kept going. I was going to say, like, for me, a lot of times, it's like, I can't really make a separation between, like when talking about political prisoners or POWs, and the fact that there's an ongoing, you know, struggle that is ongoing. So when we talk about from the time we came here, you know, the time we were born here, struggle was going on. I think sometimes we have a tendency to talk to people about political prisoners or POWs as if this was something that took place at a certain period. The thing is over now, so, you know, just work to get these folks out. And in the process of doing that, sometimes we make concessions even in our heads. And I ain't saying you got to be all aggressive with the state. We can't keep separating it. And sometimes people can understand it a whole lot better when you talk about, like, the ongoing thing. We also should point out that, you know, like a lot of cases, these people, some people in particular who are out front, it's like the state be using them as an example of what will happen if we continue to struggle. And if we keep looking or acting like it works, then the state keep on doing it. When we let them know that, you know, like, you know, again, we fight in various means to get people released, but should make it plain that, you know, this don't stop us from continuing the struggle. And I don't think many of them are asking us to do that. And we have to link them to struggle, which means we ourselves have to be engaged in some kind of struggle, you know, an ongoing struggle. But and be clear about what the politics that they express, the politics that we may have, and what's going on with people, because things like, you know, like so-and-so fought for you, so you got to fight for them. And a lot of times we don't even know what people are fighting for now. Excuse me. We don't know even, like, with the particular thing that certain prisoners were fighting for. It might all be good, but, you know, for folks fighting for independence, you know, like, that's not necessarily the argument that gets over with somebody who's fighting to be part of the empire. And there's a lot of times there are folks who are seeking to be part of the empire, but they will support, for various reasons, people who do relate to independence. But we got to be clear. But you're not just throwing slogans at them and what somebody, you know, did for us is what did for them.
True indeed. I want to add something to that, right? I want to add something to that, if you don't mind. You know, Malcolm X stated that America means prison, right? He the ideal of the father of the new African independent movement, a new African Republic, a new Africa, right? You know, we would look at certain things that were written within the Declaration of Independence in our Constitution, that Joanne Franklin, who won the founder of who also the first minister of justice, who was also a lawyer at that time, the NAACP in New York, that worked with different people like Mars Social and other individuals, right? She talked about that we never were given the decision that we wanted to be citizens or not with the 14th Amendment, right? That after the quote-unquote abolition of slavery, and we know 13th Amendment still exists, that we still enslaved due to mass incarceration or being convicted of a crime, right? And then we also, and I was also talking about the 1619 historical origin, Bob Messiah added on to it that we all been struggling to be free, and that we all been prisoners of the system because we are a oppressed nation, a new African nation, right? Those are just different notes, an idea to look at from a different viewpoint to show that we're still captured. We're still prisoners of war. We're still a political prisoner due to the current politics of Americanism, what Malcolm X called it. We're still political prisoners, you know, due to the politics. And that's what we're striving and fighting, you know what I'm saying, to establish our own independent nation. You know, it's just like we look at a lot of other nations on this planet, like Haiti, for instance, that they basically was in slavery. You know, they were political prisoners. They were prisoners of war. It was a prisoner of war over capitalism and imperialism war over resources, you know, until they established the independence through the Haitian Revolution and gained their particular freedom. The same thing for Ghana, the same thing for the quote-unquote peasant revolution of the peasant war of the Kikuyu people of Kenya, you know, in other places, you know, Zimbabwe, you know, other places that have gained their independence, and we striving to gain the same independence for ourselves. Because we recognize that we are a captive nation and we are oppressed, and we still suffer the same aspects of slavery due to being the particular system that we're in. So we find to establish our own system, right, you know, and be independent. You know, I just wanted to mention that, you know what I'm saying, for clarity, also for historical purposes, also information for you. I want to reach that. I want to mention that for the people who listen now, the people who are listening in the future. And I yield.
Thank you, brother. I have another question. Since reparations is starting to be something talked about more amongst our people, should the issue of liberating new African political prisoners of war, capturing new African citizens, be a non-negotiable part of our demands for reparation?
Well, without a doubt, the freedom of all our captured New African citizens, regardless of their particular title, identification as a political prisoner of war, or whatever, it goes along with reparations, because reparations is not just giving people monetary money or giving people land. It's also the freedom of our people, because we free all our captured citizens, along with other things that we're entitled to. They be able to build our nation. They're able to work on our nation. They even protect our nation. You know what I'm saying? Able to educate nation, other so forth, other things, right? So that's without question. This without question, you know what I'm saying, in regards to freeing and liberating them. That's all a part of reparations, right? You know, but a lot of times we know that we see now that the monetary thing caused a lot of confusion among people, because people start seeing money, especially when they don't have, they're not trying to build no nation. There's going to be a lot of confusion. Like, if you give people reparation money, they're not talking about building a nation or whatever. They have their own particular agenda and objective. It's not going to make sense to them, you know. I just wanted to mention that, you know. I yield with that as well.
All right. Baba Masai.
Well, okay. And it's in that area, I think it should be. I think that's one of the areas, like, because particularly when we're talking about captured citizens, it's like it goes into the thing, like, a lot of times when we're talking about captured citizens, well, captured New Africans is not necessarily a thing where people that we talk to, that's the terminology that they use. I think we can explain it while we're talking about it and why it should be a demand. But part of the thing, what some people can see even in our communities, is that, like, imprisonment, you know, because we ain't just talking about, you know, like somebody just being nice and letting somebody go or something like that. We can, you know, we know, like, the role that national oppression has played in even getting a lot of our people in there in the first place. We know, like, you know, like the things that goes along with national oppression is like the facilities we don't have, mental health resources we don't have. So I think when we tie it in a way and explain it to people why we're pushing that as a demand, it's much more easier for them to accept it than if we try to go in there with just a thing where, like, we're using terminology that the masses of folks can't necessarily recognize, or if we don't have a program and it just come out slogan there. And as the minister pointed out, it's like the money thing is one of the things that folks can so easily get caught up into, you know, just the financial thing, even though, like, there's large segments that know that, you know, we as a people need resources. Whether we use certain terminology or not, we know what some of the things we need, because, you know, reparations, you know, in the sense of, like, reparations is meant to help repair people, just funds yourself ain't going to do certain things unless we do have those things we need in the community to aid and assist in our development. So in a lot of ways, I think explain why our people can accept that those should be non-negotiable demands. And I want to say this too, like, and I was going to say this before, I'll say it maybe later, but even when we talk about aiding and assisting prisoners, whether it's political prisoners, POWs, or just captured citizens, That means, like, you know, not just writing a letter to a prisoner or singing about a prisoner, but developing those things that aid and assist their families on the street. Because there's a lot of folks who will keep talking about supporting prisoners and certain things, but don't know, and I'm including, like, in POWs and political prisoners on there, but never stop to check to see how their families are doing, whether people could be, you need help with the children, whether people need a break from that day-to-day thing of trying to maintain out there. We don't do that, and that's got to be all part of it. And that would tie in again with even like the thing about reparations. What are we really doing and thinking about the developing those things in the community? But don't just say, like, I'm supporting prisoners because I go visit the prisoner and I write letters and things like that. Those are all important, but what about the family? You know, or do we even let them know that they are part of the struggle, that they're part of the reason for the struggle, for a better world and a better people? And with that, I yield.
I want to say something about, you know, one of the things we have been doing with GDU over the years that we offer support to some of the family members or some of the people that we promote and propagate for their particular release, right, in regards to, like, some things might come monetary, some things might come with assistance, some things might come with various aids in regard to the children, the family, or getting people in a certain location to visit certain people, or the aspect of education, other aspects, right? You know, those things are very imperative, which Bob Messiah said, those things are very imperative, especially in regard to if we're talking about repairing our people, repairing the communities, or repairing society. You know, those things are very important in regard to showing that particular support. You know, because you look historically, a lot of times when people were locked up in different places, and a lot of lockdown units, there were actually various organizations that supported the aspect of helping transfer family members and children to see their particular loved ones all over, right? You know, and some of that still goes on right now to this day, right? You know, you just got to know what the organizations are and who the people that are actually doing certain things. Sometimes people just volunteer to collect it themselves and do it also as well, right? But that support is always needed, you know, for the family, the loved ones, and also the wife and children, things of that nature, right? Yeah. And also, like Bob Messiah said, basically getting their awareness out that their particular loved one are political prisoner, or POW, or captive citizen, whatever, or so whatever time they identify with, or whatever particular state identified at a particular time, right? And even the aspect of even when you write these individual letters, you got to ask the individual what exactly do they want or what exactly do they need that can actually help them or support them. Like Bob Messiah said, it might be something, it might sit on the outside for that particular family. You know, and I yield.
All right. Thank you. My co-host is on here too, maybe. Brother Akeem, are you on?
Freedom
Land.
Can I
have
everybody doing tonight?
Freedom Land. All right. But I mean, necessary, brother. I'm strong. How about yourself?
Doing wonderful. Thank you all for joining tonight. My apologies for my tardiness. Had a lot going on today.
Okay. It's understood, brother.
Well, Brother Akin, maybe you had a couple questions for Brother Minister and Baba Masai.
Yes. So I guess starting off, I've just been in, listening to the dialogue so far, and I really understand the perspective. But I guess my question would be, a lot of times it is the inability of people to understand, you know, the origins of our struggle with political prisoners and things of that nature. So can you all just address where would somebody who's just totally new to our plight as being political prisoners or captured New African citizens, what are some of the platforms that are available for them to be able to educate themselves and to become more familiar with that particular struggle?
Well, I'm going to go first. One of the platforms that I represent is Georgia University Radio, you know, which has been existing since December 17, 2014, right? All the shows are recorded. There's various shows that I'm the host. I interview different individuals that are current New Albany political prisoners, that are current catch New Albany citizens, that are current New Albany POWs, and also the ones that are former New Albany political prisoners, New Albany POWs. You know, and you can listen to these recordings, or you can join the live broadcast and hear the words themselves from the individual that are doing these situations, such as Mama Tamu out of RNA 11, Asbel Baba out of RNA 11, Bob Messiah Hosey who's on the phone right now, or the Armistead Collective, Brother Abdul Lukubai Shakir, known as who's a current New African political prisoner, you know, and just individuals and within themselves. You know what I'm saying? Baba Joker Shima Jensei, who's a current New Albany political prisoner. Also, we hear from former New Albany political prisoners that are deceased, such as Paul Redd, other individuals like Big Earn, who's a former New Albany political prisoner who was locked up with Conrad George and during that time and so forth and so on, who also endured many years, decades behind enemy lines. So that is a platform within itself. And also the Black Organizing Committee that details a lot of members that actually founded Black Organizing behind enemy lines in 1979, who are still current New York political prisoners that are still behind enemy lines right now, who are currently still struggling and striving and fighting for their own freedom of liberation, also New African independence. You know, you can follow us and get a little information about certain things, be it via the radio show, or via our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram page, or via through our website, or via through our various programs dealing with Black August and Black August More and Black August Resistance. Now, yeah.
All right. I would say, like, I would mention some of the ways is well, you can the Jericho Amnesty Movement website, and you can get in touch that way. You can get in touch with the individual support and defense committees for various people. You could get some material from Jericho in general. There's also the Rebuild Collective website, which in turn can connect you to some of the material, like what was called the Spear and Shield Collective, and material from others, and Spear and Shield Collective, particularly from a New African perspective, you know, has a lot of material that could be useful and relative to people. And there's also like the website or information with like the New African People's Organization. I think I just mentioned Rebuild Collective, Jericho, Spear and Shield, and I know that I'm leaving out somebody. I'm trying to stretch. I'll think about it after this is over, probably. But I wanted to say this too, because I'm not sure how much time we have left. And this is touching on something that, you know, before you started, Mr. Akin, before you started talking, I wanted to follow up with something else. I wanted to say, like, because I don't mention this enough, like, when we were talking about that, even like people doing work with and around families, a brother, because, you know, when I was captured in 1975, at that time there was also a brother with us that got killed. And I'd still be upset the fact that we didn't follow up a lot of things about what happened, how it happened, things like that. But one of the things that did happen, even when I got out, like about 14 years later, I found that people still hadn't even gotten in touch with his family. You know, to let them know what had happened, some of the people that he was involved with in another part of the country were supportive of the family, but in terms of like that active support from certain elements of the New African Independence Movement, that didn't quite happen, even up to a night, you know, really informing people about the nature of his going. And that brother left behind, like at that time, he had a young child, about 3 years old, when he first made the decision. kind of like forced to go undergrad. So he was one of the ones who actually had long-term commitment to the struggle of oppression of New African people and for the advancement of New African independence movement. And I also want to mention that along with that, for my thing, like in terms of like that educational thing, was like actually going inside where I really ran into a lot of people who were more in, where they had much more information about the New African independence movement than I did. So they, you know, very crucial to my development. I might have been political when I went in. I might have known about the independence movement and Kombosi, the brother got killed with us. He was, you know, he was very helpful with that because he came from a collective that was involved with us, what I call that scientific approach to New African independence. But like the continuing of that education on many levels came from a lot of them folks that was inside that people don't know. Those people who came from some of the formations that people don't think about a lot of times, you know, what some people don't even know about or don't remember, like RAM, APP, and some of these other formations that a lot of them were involved with the formation of the provision of government. So I'm saying that so in the beginning, it was some people that people may not have known that were involved, and I think we need to know more about them. And I need to mention that because when I came down here, because I'm in Atlanta now, but part of it, when I mentioned like being like part of Masjid al-Kaaba, we in turn were part of the national community that was headed by Imam Jamil Amin, a person, you know, that a lot of people know as H.R.I. Brown. So I think sometimes that's another one of Mary, sometimes when folks think about like, well, sometimes when we think how small we are, we're actually much larger than we think sometimes, and that's all the more reason for the state to come after us. But anyway, when I came down here, because this wasn't what we could consider to be the national territory, the Imam Jamil initially, when I started down here, but Imam Jamil had, as you all know, is like the state did the little bogus thing and put him away. And that the thought was that they would silence him, and they had made those attempts throughout his political history. And for folks who don't know, you should check up again, H.R.I. Brown or Imam Jamil Amin. But anyway, I came down here as part of that Islamic community. And I was just informed this evening as a brief update that the Innocent Project had decided to take up his case. And we feel that to be significant, you know, because they don't take on cases unless they really think it's there. We know there's something there because even though somebody else can confess to what he's in there for, he's still in there nevertheless. But I wanted to get that out there because even when we use the language, I'll use a certain language now because of who I'm talking to, but as I said, I'm a Muslim. So it's like certain language I'm not going to use if we can use it, and I don't mean like profanity or not like that. I'm talking about even when we keep going into political prisons and POWs. For a lot of Muslims, like the struggle ain't about that. I mean, it's like struggles for we supposedly committed to the struggle against oppression, but we do it for the sake of Allah. And we have to remind people of that once in a while before they pull us somewhere, no matter where it is. But that's not where we're trying to go. We respect and support, or, you know, a lot. So, yeah, I wanted to say that because a lot of times I close and didn't get that in there. But my brother Kombosi, a very beautiful brother, but he was representative of a lot of people who engaged in the struggle for independence that we don't know about. And with that, I yield.
Okay. Before you go to the next question, I want to add on to what you requested, right? A couple other places you can find out about these categories of New York political prison, New York POW is the California Prison Focus magazine, and also California Prison Focus Radio. Also, San Francisco Bayview News, they've been in publication for 40-something plus years. They also have a radio show as well. And also the South Chicago ABC Dying Disco that actually published a lot of publication from a lot of the current New African political prison, as well as former New African political prison and New African POWs as well. And they published a lot of publication in the form of Zines and Leeches as well, right? So those are different places where you can find very information and resources about the individuals that, right? And also on his former website that still popped up called the New African Collective Think Tank, that is strictly geared toward the understanding of New Arab Revolutionary Nationalists at the aspect of being New Arab political prison on the West Coast in regard to enduring the SHU program, Security Housing Unit, you know, which is a lockdown unit. You find that information about on those very platforms and various situations. And I yield.
All right. Thank you for that, brother. Appreciate you guys' respect for getting that information out there. I guess moving on, I know Baba Masai, you mentioned how you were not really exposed or why you were behind enemy lines. You got a better understanding of the situation from a political prisoner standpoint. Can you speak to that as opposed to, you know, what that was like, and Brother Bomani as well, what that was like being inside, and then what brought you to that line where you wanted to start studying more and then increase your knowledge about the plight of our people? What did that process look like? Was it just you were just there, you just decided to do something, or what did that look like for your personal experience and your journey to become the person you are now?
Okay, well, okay, one of the things, because, like, I had been doing some work, and I had been doing some work with some people outside, and I was a member of the BPP, Black Panther Party, as was a lot of other people. As you know, it's like I had started, and I should say, like, when I came out of those people's military, I came out of their military, I had came back from Vietnam, and, like, in the late 60s, and like a lot of people wanted to, you know, throw my talents into doing those things, it was, you know, supported to ending the oppression of our people. I had already been picked up a few times for being part of those rebellions and stuff that, you know, we were engaging in the 60s. So when I got out, I wanted to hook up and do some stuff along those lines. And eventually, I hooked up with some folks around the BPP along with some other folks that got out with me. And that led to working with some people around trying to do things like liberating prisoners, because I kind of like relate to certain activities like that. And other people that spoke on that, it's like sometimes it was like a lot of confusion taking place, and it got to a point where I didn't really think like some things was as effective as we could be. Like some people, like very good communications and the political thing and whatever, but it just didn't seem like we were putting that together effective on that other area. So after a few events with some other people, I ended up being, like, you know, captured or picked up in 1975, along with the sister that was still alive, Safia Bakari, and a lot of water for good deeds. And she was one of the co-founders of Jericho. Well, while with her and the brother Kumbozi, ran into some other folks. And that actually, being with them was because, like, part of that thing, I said, like, you know, some of us just didn't think that we was as organized as we could be, you know, as effective. A lot of that had to do with COINTELPRO and being constantly on the run, so from different things. So anyway, once I got inside, it was like, for a lot of people in some ways, it was like that kind of like that little break, because now it's like you was kind of like, in some ways, you was forced to sit there. Or at the very least, you didn't have to worry about whether they were going to, you know, get you or find you the next day, because you already gotten. And at that time, there was also a call that had came out. The call that actually came out before, you know, before I was even inside. But I hadn't been able to follow up on it effectively. But anyway, inside, once I got inside, I just ran into, like, there were so many brothers who were inside in the Virginia system, primarily those who were coming from the federal system, who were just like bringing information, you know, with them. So we started like little study groups or study sections. And along with that, there was those elements of the BLA who, like I said, knew that we needed to do stuff a little bit better, you know, computer core consolidation. for some people. That broom didn't reach everywhere, but for a lot of folks, it was a thing where we knew like we needed to do something. So we started developing a whole nother structure. So that's why I said that about inside. And initially, a large part of me is like I was constantly looking for ways to get out, and I never really stopped that. But I also was like rebelling at a lot of stuff. And there were some people who pointed out to me like kind of like slow down a little bit and focus on some other stuff. So that's where like the political part like became like a little bit, I would say, clearer. In terms of, like, you know, the independence movement. And it also meant, like, I was exposed to more people than just people from the BPP. Because primarily the people I was exposed to when I was in prison wasn't from the BPP. They came from some of them other formations. But they, in turn, knew some other people who were involved, you know, hooked up with people who, like I say, came from formations that was down with. I'm getting drawn a clearer picture of the independence movement. Around that time, I also became exposed to, like I mentioned, Spin Shield before. Spin Shield was like before that, was prior to that, was the New African People's Organization. So inside was where for a lot of us became a realization.
New African Prison Organization.
Oh, what did I say? Okay.
No, you said people.
New African Prison. Okay, excuse me. Sorry, thank you for that. Yeah, the New African Prisoners Organization. And in turn, they had developed out of things like the Statesville Prisoners Organization, Pontiac Prisoners Organization. And these were all formations to a greater sense of the independence movement as opposed to just that general black liberation movement. So even though we was consolidating and trying to work and develop on the armed front and things related to the armed front, it was also a growing recognition for a lot of us that there was a difference, you know, between like the independence movement and that general movement. So that's why I would say like where, you know, the prison kind of like, you know, made some things possible. I might not have liked being there, but it made some things like, you know, clear and possible. I was also in there during the time when the provisional government was going through some of their changes. And I guess with the constitutional crisis. And so that also meant that people had to think a little bit more about certain things. That's when, like, so when I talk about some of the support for POWs, we looked at things like the Geneva Convention. People will put more effort into really trying to put those things into practice. That was one of the things even when I got captured, because one, when certain things happen, it's like I didn't know certain things, so I didn't know how to say, wasn't going to say nothing anyway. But at the same time, that little military thing from their military came in, and my thing was that you don't say nothing but name, rank, and serial number. But I found out, like, that's not the way they were playing it. And for some of us, we really didn't even really know that. So inside with people, particularly those folks who were heavily into the law library, it was like we would put stuff together. And I started seeing, you know, when we talk about a nation, all the things that make up a nation. And we had talked about that even when we talked about the consolidation effort, you know, like, the armed front didn't just mean people running around with weapons. That wasn't the primary thing. It was building infrastructure, structure, and all those things. So inside it was like you had people who had those skills, you know, had a lot of heart to do a lot of stuff, but that didn't mean heart didn't mean that you couldn't have a brain and think. We encourage education. If you couldn't read and write, we encourage learning to read and write, not to please the oppressors, but so that we could know how to advance as a people. So that's when I say that about inside. And going back to the brother Kombozi, when I say he came from a collective, I think it was called Spear and Shield, not Spear and Shield, Arm the Spirit. No, Seize the Time, from the West Coast. And, you know, I really like being around him because, you know, they related to armed struggle, but they also related to the independence movement from the scientific thing, not like, you know, a pure emotional thing, you know, related to the existence of nations within the confines of the U.S. So I found that real good. So those were some of the things that led to it. And I should say Kombozi also, when he came, because of some of the, like I said, trying to put some other stuff together at that time, he had come from actually working with people out there who did work around around Geronimo. And for a lot of people, if you were doing work around Geronimo or with Geronimo, then it meant that there were certain things that you knew or did on a certain level. Everybody might not have felt that, but for a lot of people, it was like, yeah, related to certain activities. And we also knew that, developing better connections between what was happening on the East Coast and the West Coast, which was sometimes lacking. Kombozi brought that because that's where he was coming from when he came to the East Coast. So, and immediately hooked up, that's when I hooked up with the brother. Yep. And I don't know if I answered your question, but you can ask me again later if I didn't, but that's what I meant about inside. And I'm saying brothers because I was with brothers, but there were so many sisters involved in struggle, and I think sometimes people don't really know that and realize that the women prisons were going up on strikes. Women were involved in a lot of activities, all that energy. And not just, the weaker people or nothing like that, but they were coming from struggle themselves, and we have a tendency to forget that. They were coming, they were working and organizing in those camps just like males were with that idea.
All right.
I'm going to answer my section about what Mr. Akin said as well, of a question. Well, behind enemy lines, I actually didn't come in as a political prisoner or even politically educated. The first time I actually heard about New African Independent Movement or the PGRNA was in 97. I read the book Monster by Saint Shakir, a.k.a. Monster Cody, right? And I immediately wanted to know more about it. So, but while being behind enemy lines, we had access to very material that we can request. It was a resource called the prisoner resource. It was like a pamphlet, a booklet, right? And it had different aspects of getting into with different organizations, such as the Myers International Movement, South Africa ABC 9 Disco, and so forth and so on, right? I wrote some of these publications and with some of these book programs, where I started receiving material, and when I was seeing the material from the South ABC 9 Disco, I ran across Georgia University. I also ran across before you enjoyed the university, I ran across certain things by Abdul Lubar Shakur during the late 90s before Georgia University even created, right? And they were talking about the New African Independent Movement and being a New African political prisoner, New African Revolutionary Nationalist, right? They opened my mind up to certain things. And also, when I started to communicate with different brothers that came from the West Coast, there had been a lot of the West Coast that came from, quote-unquote, prison movements from the West Coast, such as the Kumi, the 415s, and the Diamond Star, which is the Bloodline, and the other organizations during the 80s and 90s that came out of California prison system. I started corresponding to these brothers who were also doing time as well. It started to bring my perspective. And one of the more instrumental person in my development throughout the time that was the old brother I met from Chicago that was formerly from the L. Rukins. And the brother had told me a long time ago, he said that it doesn't matter what nation, organization, or collective you're part of, if you know your laws, there will be no beef, no misunderstanding. It'll just be respect, right? Now, and from that perspective, I started seeing things different perspectives, you know what I'm saying? Just from my own experiences and getting involved, just by doing, getting involved in my own, quote-unquote, legal matters and writing petitions and going to the law library and having to study with things of that nature, right? It brought my perspective, my political ideology, my political education, right? And then upon embracing hitting the street outside world, I immediately wanted to participate in the involvement of the New African Independent Movement. And that's why I officially came on around about 2010, 2011. I first came on in the Ministry of Youth at that time, right? And I've been actively involved in PG since that time in regard to doing the work officially. I've been actually involved in since that time, one of the individuals I first ran into was with a former chair, Fahim RBG Ali. You know, they're one of the first people I ran into because we were part of a collective called the Common Ground Approach, which was a collective of very brothers and sisters from street organizations that were politically educated on certain levels and aspects in which we wanted to move in a certain transition, a different way of life, you know. But people from all walks of life were involved with it, from brothers who were Keyway, who were Crip, Diamond, who was Bloods, brother who were Grosvenor Veteran, brother who were Stones, brother who were Folk on the Hustlers, brother who Nation Islam, more scientists, so forth and so on, right? So my politics has various different standpoints to it in regards to my own very relations, even my relations to myself and various group owners that I've been related and connected to as well. So I got various forms of political education and politics that I call my particular origin or my particular plight, you know. So I'm just going to yield right there. Yeah, the Prison Activity Resource Center. That's the PARC. That's what it's called. Prison Activity Resource Center. That had information going on about different things from the politics, from religion, from spirituality, from human rights, from legal assistance. You know, that was the name of the pamphlet. And what is the organization? Yeah, I know you, though.
All right. That'll work. Thank you for that.
Doubt.
I guess my last question, and then we can go into I give it back to Brother Zumbi, see if he has any more, then we can go to our final thoughts. But I know you both mentioned that you were able to get a deeper understanding why you were behind enemy lines. Based on what you experienced and what you heard from people behind enemy lines nowadays, do you see it as still being a kind of like a teaching tool for the plight of our people being behind enemy lines now, or has there been changed? And do you feel as if that is one of the best ways for us to be able to get understanding about our plight, you know, from those brothers that are, you know, like you said, incarcerated and they don't really have, you know, anywhere to go. So do you feel like that's the best way for us to be able to indoctrinate our people?
Well, you know, I'm gonna say something about that, man. My thing is that what I don't realize from that is that if you involve New Africa Independence, which might build a new Africa, build a New African nation, right? Your best place to be is on the streets, man. That's it, man. That's all I have to say about it, man. Now you.
Okay, I gotta laugh at that. I don't think that's the best place at that particular time. Was just because so many people were put together at, you know, in a common spot, whether they wanted to or not. What came from that, though, is one of the things is that there was increasing use of the state developing control units, supermax prisons, and whatever. So it's a whole different dynamic now. And as they said, when they developed the Marion Prison, the purpose of Marion was to, you know, break that revolutionary spirit both behind the walls and outside. So just like we were getting together, the state was very much aware of that. And so we got to go from Florence up to like something like, I mean, from Marion up to something like a Florence, the administrative segregation. So they do everything they can to separate both, to break them down further in violation of all kind of international laws and stuff. So no, the inside is not the best place. We try to do what we can, and people try to do what they can to work with those conditions, but no. And I think actually for us out here, we should really, really think about what's happening there, because then, if anything, we would step up our efforts to get people released. Because, I mean, in addition to the folks who may know about those regular camps, those supermax prisons are designed to break people. I mean, the United States, Florence is so bad that the European Union wouldn't even let prisons come there at one time. So, no, and I don't think we should ever think out here that those are the best places, the good places, whatever. As the minister said, no. The best places is out here, and particularly when not only are they under increasingly harsh conditions, but increasingly longer. So, no. So, yes, I didn't mean to imply no kind of way that it was whatever. It was just at that particular time that we were talking about.
Okay.
That was a force.
I got you. It was just the conditions were right to be able to produce. I got you.
It wasn't right. It was just a spot where, because there were so many people, because it was also like, you know, the activity out here. So a lot of people that was coming in, you know, like I said, it's like, because the provisional government had just been founded. You know, the provisional government work had been talked about. The provisional government was just founded in the late 60s. So it was like that thing where, like, I think in a lot of ways it was like people were trying to sharpen their analysis about what was happening and where we were going forward. A lot of people was trying to get away from just the sloganeering thing. So that's what you would have had coming into some of them camps. You would have also had a lot of people coming from movements like the anti-war movement. You would have had people who were involved in their military who were bringing certain things. And I think in a lot of ways it was a real seriousness of like, of just what the state was doing. You know, it couldn't be just like just the sloganeering, you know. And when you look at like, and I'll mention them, they're not the only ones, one of the largest ones, like when you look at the assaults or like on things like the Panther Party, you know, the state was hitting very openly, you know, people for their political beliefs, and it was dawning on a lot of people. So inside, like I said, it was the only thing where like, because not we weren't here, like, because we didn't have nothing else to do, we couldn't, just couldn't go anywhere. But, you know, you didn't have to worry about your door kicking. Well, sometimes you do, you know. Sometimes you might kick your cell door in because you're in there plotting something. But other than that, it's not like you had to worry about moving around outside because you wasn't outside. But no. But the amount of time got increasingly longer than what it is now. That's also where it led to a lot of us, like we were telling folks, like if you were involved with certain activities, political activities, it didn't, you know, to announce that that's what you was involved in, if you were doing certain activities, wasn't beneficial because the state was not relating to Geneva Convention or anything else. So if you were engaged in political activities, you know, kind of like pull back on announcing so much. Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for that clarity. And I appreciate both of you all's perspective. At this time, we want to go ahead and give our final thoughts for the evening. So either you, Baba Messiah, or you, Brother Bomani, please give us your final thoughts.
Okay. Well, my final thing is, just, man, long live the resistance, long live the African independent movement. Whatever you do, do it to the best of your ability for building a new African nation. You know, do it to the best ability, man. You know, and also know that all the people that are labeled new African political prisoners, new African POWs, and catching new African citizens, are here, people like you, people like me and you, you know what I'm saying, and also need our support just as well. As we need to support each other in our year.
Okay, I'll go with that. I would include like do what you can for the independence movement, for the new African nation, and as we say, you know, within the nation, you know, to help build a better world. Period. I mean, struggle against all forms of oppression. To do what we can to be able to do that. And I'll probably think of stuff later. So for now, I just say that that's it, because we'll be back. And I appreciate the opportunity to share some thoughts. And if there's any other questions anyone has, don't hesitate to ask me. I'll be around somewhere. With that, I yield.
All right, so I want to say I want to say the same thing. I appreciate for the opportunity, man, and I appreciate this platform that's being utilized to inform and educate the mind and message to people. And I appreciate the work that y'all done did in the past, the present, and the future. I yield.
All right. Thank you both for that. My co-host, sure. Brother Zumbi, can you give us your final thoughts?
Free land by any means necessary. That's my final
thought. So, to the point, I got you. All right. Yes, myself, Brother Akin, my final thoughts for the day. I just want to thank everyone who was on the call tonight, all those people who are listening and who will listen. It is imperative that we understand the plight of our people on all fronts, not just what we can see out here on the streets, but those behind enemy lines as well. We must do the work so that we can achieve our goal of our independent sovereign nation with our own land and independence and sovereignty. And so to that end, we invite anyone to join in to our struggle. If you want to know more about the PGRNA, please feel free to go to our website, pg-rna.com. And on that site, you can donate to the struggle. You can also learn more about organizations that are going on, up-to-date information, as well as our social media handles as well. And so today I say free the land, free the land, free the land. And thank you all for joining. This concludes another episode of PGRNA Radio.
I mean this, sir.